Today's episode is brought to you by Pitch Invaders, the online apparel business dedicated to fostering community and growing soccer in the heart of America. Based in the vibrant soccer hub of Arlington, Virginia, Pitch Invaders proudly champions their slogan, "The Pitch is for the People." Their mission? To unite soccer enthusiasts nationwide through their unique blend of casual and athletic gear. But Pitch Invaders isn't just about clothing. They're about collaboration, partnering with clubs, associations, and more. They create exclusive merch designs that promote their brands together. And here's the kicker. Partners receive a revenue split on collaborative merch sales to help support them. From the streets to the stadium, Pitch Invaders products boast soccer-related sayings on the back like, "You got nutmeg, press machine, and golazo getter." So whether you're cheering from the stands or dominating the field, gear up with Pitch Invaders and join the movement. Visit pitchinvadersusa.com to explore their latest collections and become part of something bigger. Use the code MATCHPLAY at checkout for 15% off your purchase. Pitch Invaders, the pitch is for the people.
Thanks for coming, guys. Like I said, we were kind of talking earlier. We want you to ask questions. This is going to be complete Q&A. You've got a few different types of schools to deal with here. We have Division I school, three Division III schools, and Andrew's a part of a private school, so you have some different avenues you can go with your questions. So don't hesitate with something. If you have something specific towards a certain school, you can ask directly to them. And we're going to open it up. I'll actually start. I'll ask the first question, okay? How many of you guys here have had the conversation with your family on how you're going to pay for school? A lot of you have not raised your hands. A lot of you are going into your senior year and you don't know how you're going to pay for school. Okay, that's, you need to know. You need to know, like, probably on the ride home tonight or tomorrow. Go ahead and get it out of the way. It's for your fact finding. It's going to help you kind of curtail your search a little bit. It's going to answer a lot of questions. And I recommend you do that in the next 48 hours. Okay, so if you haven't done it, do it. Even if you're a freshman, do it now. It's going to help you throughout your process. Okay? Great. Well, I'll go sit down. And who wants to kick us off?
What have players that we have selected done that stick out to us?
I'll answer that. I mean, the question that we usually get, and I like the way you phrased it actually a little bit better, because it should be more specific. What we usually get is, what are you looking for in a player? And the reality is, that could be, you know, we might have four different answers up here. And if it's a different year, the answer that I give you now may be different from the answer that I give you a year from now. A lot of it will be dependent on kind of the timing, you know, the year that it is, what we're looking for in recruiting that particular cycle. So it can be very different. It can be based on the philosophy of each of our programs and how we want to run things and coach. For us specifically, you know, there's a certain level of athleticism that you have to play at the Division I level. But getting even more in depth, you know, we want to try to play a little bit. We want to have the ball some. You know, we are a high academic school, so we expect most of the guys that we recruit to have good soccer IQs that kind of match maybe their academic ability. You know, most importantly, we want people of high character. You know, it doesn't do us any good to have a really talented individual who is not bought into what we're doing culturally, who isn't making good decisions off the field, isn't taking care of the academic side of things, can be disruptive in the locker room. You know, so and isn't very fun to coach for all those reasons. So, you know, and there's a lot of things that go into it, but I would say you got to look at the school that you're interested in. You got to talk to those coaches. You got to watch those teams play to figure out if your characteristics fit into the way that coach likes to coach. You got to make sure that the academics are fit, and you got to make some good decisions in terms of, you know, how you handle yourself in all areas of your life, because we all want to be surrounded by good people who are going to be good members of our programs and also our campus community.
Yeah, you guys know who Mike McDaniels is, the coach for the Miami Dolphins?
he was asked at the NFL draft, what traits are you looking for in a player? And he says good traits. It's such a long question. It's a broad question. And, to just add on to that, it didn't even change his position in a lot of ways. So we have a few things that we all look for, but for the most part, it's going to vary year to year, position to position, and circumstance to circumstance. The next question. Good.
How much will
Sorry, he's going to pick him. He's got him.
Can you repeat that question? Just you're asking at a high school, at a club?
Yeah, like at a club level. Is it more than a player that played at a UPSL?
Yeah, I think it can be an advantage because you're probably playing with older players who have a lot of experience. And I think that's definitely something that can benefit you. My personal opinion, that's one of the issues I think the United States versus Europe and other parts of the world, where young players like yourself, better players will be playing with older, seasoned veteran players, and I think that will help you become a smarter player, learn from them, and it's like having several coaches, so to speak, that are working with you right on the field. So I think there can be a benefit.
Yeah, let me just add on to that. I think whether it's UPSL or something like that, Jason's point about playing with older players is kind of the natural progression, around the world when you're a good young player. The more important thing is not necessarily whether it's USL2, UPSL, MPSL, whatever. It's getting out of your comfort zone. It's not just like being in a level where you're the man all the time and, only learning to do certain things because they work the majority of the time. The challenge with moving from one level to a higher level is that every player is that much better. They think faster, they're a little more technical, they're a little more athletic, and so the more you can get out of your comfort zone as a youth player, the better prepared you're going to be.
How much will someone's GPA affect being recruited?
We all have kind of our boundaries, and it's going to change per school. Some schools have a hard cutoff. Some schools have a little bit of grace that they're allowed to be given. I'll tell you right now, all of us don't want to hold someone's hands through the academic process. It's going to have to be like 30 goals a season for me to want to really be excited about that. So we want kids that are going to come in, be driven, be motivated to do well academically, someone that I'm not going to have to help. And the reality here, guys, is most of you are going to be smart enough. I looked at the GPAs. Most of you are going to be smart enough at, most of the schools here. So the question is, how are you going to handle the change getting to college, not having the, your family's roof that you're there, not having that structure, having a completely different environment. Some of you are going to be far away from home in some cases. And how you handle that's going to be the real test. And, once you get past that, once you kind of learn your good habits and you take care of your business, then you should be smart enough to finish off the school year. But to answer your question directly, we definitely want kids that are going to be able to take care of their business academically and not be a problem. Yeah, the question was, how do walk-ons work at your school? And you might get four different answers up here. For CNU, we usually do walk-ons in the spring semester. We have had some fall semester tryouts, kids that we kind of knew, maybe they picked up an injury late in the recruiting process, and now they're healthy, and we knew who they were, and they're going to be at CNU. But usually it's in the spring semester. We even will go to our club, CNU has a club team, and we'll go to the club games and treat those like recruiting events, and we'll go watch them play and see if we want to invite people to try out in the spring. The main rule you need to know is you have to be at the school as a student in order to try out. I say that because as Division III and Division I schools, we all probably get emails where they're saying, hey, I'd like to come try out or practice with the team, and that's illegal. I guess you can if they're just playing pickup or whatever in the back and you want to go play and they let you do that, that's fine, but no coach is allowed to be there in a formal type setting. Does anybody have different method of tryouts that they do? Okay. Oh, is there a follow-up? Sure. Okay, so now, when I said club, I meant the CNU club team, but not, so what you're asking is your club team, right, so, you know, what league are you in? Like, there's a lot of other follow-up questions, but we watch kids from across the country all the time, and I have recruited a kid from my camp and not needed to see him again. Most of the time, I've recruited a kid from camp, I really like him, now I want to go see him in his environment, in his comfort zone, in his natural position, with his team and his coach, seeing how he reacts. I'd like to watch him multiple times. You know, I don't want to just see you once, but I have done that before. I've got a kid from camp and loved it, and so it was perfectly fine. I will go see a Miami kid. Sometimes you're here in my backyard in Richmond. We can go catch you there, or, you know, we'll make the trip down to Florida for, you know, some Orlando trip. So we will see. I know there's an Arizona kid here, and, you know, we'll definitely search you out and find you for sure. If there's interest after this camp, we will absolutely make a way to come see you again.
Stuff outside of soccer, so like our academic achievements or extracurriculars and stuff. He's asking that's like helpful to you guys.
Yeah, so the question here is, you know, he started off with, if we build a relationship with you, is it appropriate to include other things outside of soccer? And I'll go first, but I'll let other people answer this for sure. I want that stuff on the front end. I think that it's, you don't have to have a relationship with me for me to know some things. I like to know different things about the players. There might be a connection there. There might be something specific at the school that really might attract you more that you just don't even know about. You might have wrote me a soccer letter and you had some interest in seeing you, but you want to study this thing or you like this thing that is a perfect fit for us, then I'm going to let you know. And so ideally in your welcome email to me or just in general conversing, I'd like to hear about some of that stuff. I definitely don't want to a two-page email, you know, something quick, a couple snippets about you that might be interesting, I think are great to add to even an introductory email. Does anybody disagree or have any follow-ups for that? Andrew?
I think some of that comes in the application process, too. Like, we can see your whole application, or at least I can. I don't know if it's the same with you guys, too. So, like, if you do community service, if you are out in your community and doing a bunch of other stuff, that stuff will show up, and for us, that can help you get extra money as well. So I think it's very, very important to include that on the front end when you're talking to us, when you're talking to us at a game or on the sideline or whatever. Make sure you mention that stuff because that could set you apart from some other guys who are just coasting by and just going to school and just playing soccer. If you're doing more and going above and beyond, that'll set you apart in a different way.
Sure. So the question was, just confirm this, during the season specifically, what's a typical student athlete's day during the season? That's the question? Perfect. Once again, you might get some different answers based off of practice timing and stuff. When I answer that question, I'll give you kind of a weekly rundown. You got a couple games a week. Let's pretend it's a Wednesday and a Sunday game. So Monday, Tuesday, we'll have practice. Wednesday's a game. Thursday, Friday, practice. Saturday's a game. Sunday's off. The day itself, we train between 3 and 6 here at CNU. And so I've encouraged all my kids to knock their classes out and finish them up. And then you have the rest of your day to just be a soccer player and then go do your own thing afterwards. Some kids, of course, will have a night class, and that changes their day a little bit. But that's a kind of a normal day. You'll run into some different hiccups when you have some big travel. I know that probably Coach Norris and William Mary, they fly. You fly probably every year, and some maybe once a year. You know, there's some schools where, I mean, we have to fly this year for our conference tournament to California. That obviously changes that week a little bit when you're leaving on, did you leave Tuesday? Yeah, you know, so that's a long week. Got some makeup homework for that week. So, maybe there's some different answers. Anybody practice in the morning here or late at night or have any weird scheduled things?
You're going to find across the board, because the rules and the number of competitions are the same. For Division I, Division III, the fall season looks very similar. The number of hours, all that stuff. So in addition to what Justin mentioned, as far as, you know, having training, two games a week, we'll typically have some other things. You're going to have to spend some time probably doing some video review, some pregame, you know, planning sessions. Could be some individual meetings to go over performances or just have some feedback sessions. And then, of course, you're going to class. I think what people get caught up in is that playing a college sport is going to be so much more demanding, and therefore it should impact whether I decide to even try it or not. And the reality is that it probably isn't any more demanding than what high school kids are doing right now, especially if you're playing club at a high level, if you're playing for your high school team. The reality is that everything that we do is very self-contained. So if you're playing in a club and you got to travel, you know, an hour to practice four nights a week or three nights a week, you know, that adds a lot of time. You're also in school 5 days a week, probably average of about 7 hours a day. So you're in class or in school 35 hours a week. A typical semester at any of these universities, you're in class 15 hours a week, okay? So you're picking up a lot of time, because you don't have to drive an hour to get to our practice. You probably got to walk, just like you did here, maybe, you know, 5 minutes from your dorm to the locker room, and then you walk straight out to the practice field, and you pick up a lot of time in those situations. The reality is that the demands are a little bit different, probably just in terms of how competitive it is. You know, we're all trying to make a living by getting results playing soccer, college soccer, and we're relying on guys like you to help us get there, obviously, and to help you if you want to continue playing to get to wherever it is that you want to go. But the reality is that the time commitment is probably not any different. It's just maybe a little bit different in terms of the focus and how much we have in terms of resources to help you continue to get better.
Go there first. And then mob straight ahead next guy. So the question is, as college coaches, do you prioritize player development more compared to results, right? Well, I mean, look, results are, that's what you're going to see, right? The player development leads to results. So I'd like to say that we're all working on developing players, and, you know, maybe a kid isn't ready to go yet and we're still working on him so he can help us later down the road. But at the end of the day, when Saturday rolls around and I'm playing these two guys, like, I got to win the game. You know, so that's where all of our focus is the day before, all of our focus is the day of. So I would say that during the season, you're going to see more of a priority on winning games. I think that when you get to the spring, and, you know, Coach Norris might talk here in a minute about how they get five scrimmages or 5 days to play. We get one, but we are a little more focused on maybe developing a kid that we need to really help us in the fall, or we just need more out of some kid that we didn't get enough out of in the fall. So I would say it's twofold, but, you know, that the reality is we have to win games, you know, to keep our jobs. So I probably agree there, yeah. Do you have something to follow?
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's very similar to youth soccer. You know, I mean, I coach a youth soccer team as well. A lot of these guys have been involved in youth soccer. I mean, we are trying to do both at the same time, and it is a juggling act. Obviously, as Justin said, you know, depending on what school we're at, our jobs may be based on the results that we get. So, of course, we're trying to get results, right? But we are also trying to help players get better for a multitude of reasons. One, we may have guys that during the recruiting process express a desire to us to play college or to play beyond college. And, of course, if we sell them that we're going to help you achieve that goal, then part of that is going to be for 4 years helping them get better so that they might have that opportunity beyond college. At the same time, like at our level, we play a lot of Power 5 schools. And in order for us to have a good chance to beat those teams, typically, or our best years, where we make the NCAA tournament and we win a conference championship, it usually coincides with times where we have older groups with a lot of experience, and those guys certainly were not the players as freshmen that they are at that point. And so we've had to work pretty hard to help them develop, just as they've, you know, worked hard to get there. So it is a juggling act, and we're trying to do both. I think most programs would say that.
I think you'll find benefit across all classes. So specifically for juniors, well, the communication's already begun for juniors, and there's already scholarship money given to juniors and spots offered to juniors across the country. So I don't think it's too early. I think in a lot of cases, especially the juniors now that might have been sophomores on older teams, they were being recruited pretty heavily just last spring, you know, this past spring. So I would say that the timeline's perfect, actually, for juniors. Seniors, your timeline's a little different, right? I mean, most of us are ideally wrapping up here in the next 6 months. So now you've got your showcases are coming up. How many ID camps have you been to this summer? And we start our seasons soon. You know, once we start in August, there's not a ton of free time for us to break away and go watch games, unless it's something local, or maybe we're in an area where there's a game we can go catch while we're staying in a hotel. But it's going to be very hard from roughly August 15th to, hopefully for all of us, November 15th, December 15th. We're still playing. That's why you see all the showcases starting up at that time again. But then it gets to crunch time at that point. So I would say the juniors, your timing's great. Seniors, you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. You're getting in front of us and being seen. Are there sophomores here? Yeah, a couple sophomores. We're already starting our list. Like, I have a list for 2027. And I'm already like, okay, let's put him on that list. Let's make sure we keep an eye on him. A lot's going to change in the next 18 months, but we're going to make sure I have to make sure I see this kid. He did really well at our camp. And freshmen, it's kind of on the same line there. It's a little early, you know, for them, but at the end of the day, if you're treating it like a freshman as, I'm going to show up, I'm going to play against kids that are older, bigger, stronger than me, I'm going to kind of get a taste of what maybe Coach Norris is talking to a kid specifically, or if you go to certain camps, you'll see, like, they're bringing in incoming kids to their camps, and they're bringing in their top recruits to camp. You get to measure yourself directly with the kid that school is recruiting, or maybe has already offered. And so you get to know exactly what you're getting yourself into as a 15-year-old or a 14-year-old. So there's still value at that point as well. And so, but specifically to your question, I would say juniors, your timing's good. You've got to get all over us now, because We're starting our list. We're finishing up our 25s here in the next 6 months or so. But I'm way deep into my 26s, at least making a list already. Is that pretty fair? The question is, I guess you're asking if we've had examples of that, and how many maybe of kids have started at one of our Division III schools and ended up at a Division I. I would say before the COVID craziness with the fifth-year option, there's a few, I guess. We've all had maybe a few. I know Jason's had some international kids at a previous school that were sensational players that, you know, made that jump, but specifically kids like yourselves, not that many. It really hasn't been that many. Now with COVID, we've all had kids that have had options to go get a grad degree and go play a fifth year. I know Chris has called me about a few Division III kids in the past. We had a few at our last ID camp that were actively trying out to play at William & Mary as D3 kids at our ID camp. And, you know, so it's definitely possible. I emphasize the COVID thing because of that fifth year option. It became more likely. I don't know if it's going to go back to where it's not as many. I mean, I've got a couple, but they transferred because they wanted a specific degree change, and we just helped them find their way onto that roster. I haven't seen too many kids make the jump specifically on purpose outside of the fifth-year grad, or they just want to change degrees. But it is possible. I definitely, we all have stories, I'm sure, of kids that have left us to go play Division I. And one of my guys is going to UMass next year to play his fifth year to get a specific degree for grad school next year. Lucas in the corner. Getting your workout in, Scott. The question is, do we encourage our players to play in the off season in a USL or MPSL? And yes, of course, we want you fit, we want you playing, we don't want you sitting around doing nothing. It's obvious, you know, I think Coach Kilby was talking about earlier how you could really see the development change when you're playing with older, bigger, stronger kids. Sometimes they're like 25 to 30 year old men that know all the little nuances that you've never seen before, and you know, like, how is this guy who can't even run just dominating me? And you're learning, you know, big boy soccer at that point. So we heavily encourage it. I know, to kind of add on to that, it's not perfect. It's not easy. And I don't want you thinking that you, if you don't play over the summer, you can't make an impact on a college team. That's not true. You know, you may have a great internship and you're working till 7 o'clock at night. Like, where are you going to go play if that's the case? And we want you to have those internships for when you graduate and you have a great job. And so I will say, bare minimum, you better make sure you're fit. You better make sure you're on top of all your stuff. You better touch the ball as much as you can. Maybe you hop on, if you have that internship, you hop on like an adult league team and you play some Friday night games like we have here going on at 10 o'clock at night. But in a perfect world, even with that job, you try to find yourself a team that's local that you could hop onto and, you know, work your way up the ladder, and you know, probably get your butt kicked early on, and then next thing you know, by your junior senior year, you're helping a good USL team or MPSL team. That's great, and that definitely helps us. We notice a difference when a kid had been playing all summer and he checks in August. We're like, okay, he's been playing, he's ready, he can tell his touch is clean, and he's, as they say, in form. You can definitely tell a difference. That's it.
Yeah, we place a majority of our players on MPSL or USL2 throughout the summer. Two of our current players right now are playing in tonight's MPSL semifinals of the national championship in Columbus. I think Columbus United in Georgia. So, I think it's been very helpful. I think they get to play with a lot of other players from NAIA Division I schools, international players, so I think it's great for their experience, and I think it's very important for them as for their development, and also, like Justin said, so when they come back on August 15th, they're close to form, right? Their fitness is there, they're sharp, and again, I think they enjoy that experience, and it's important for our program.
Can you repeat that?
A little bit louder.
Yeah, that's just a mic for the recording. Can you speak up? Okay, so the question is, what percentage of players on your current roster did you first identify from camp? And just so you know, 80% of all statistics are made up. Just so you know. Including that one. There you go. Originally identified, I don't know. I'm going to be guessing no matter what it is. I'll tell you this. Our camps we find extremely valuable. I get to work with you. My assistants get to work with you. We get to coach you. I can't go sit down at your club game and like, hey, scoot over. I need to give you some pointers, you know, and see how you react to that. Like, this is really the only environment, unless you're, you know, do you have a club team, Andrew? So Coach Norris coaches a club team, but he's got to coach just those 18 kids, you know. So It's a perfect environment for us to be able to see exactly kind of who you are as a player, how coachable you are. So we love that. We identify a ton of kids through this. A lot of times it is the beginning. I mean, going into this event, most of you, I know a little bit, you know, at most, I know a little bit. I haven't studied all of you perfectly yet. So this will be a very early recruiting process for all of you if something goes from today. I find these things to be super valuable. So to answer your question specifically, I don't have an answer, but a lot of our kids are either identified here or we bring them to camp so that we could check off the final box and know, like, all right, this is one of our guys.
Yeah, I would say we probably get one, and it isn't just from the summer camp. We do a series of one-day camps throughout the year as well. I would say through each annual camp cycle, we get 1 to 2 players a year. Our roster size is 27, so, you know, the percentage isn't a super high percentage, but we do get, like as Justin said, you know, for us, recruiting is about turning over every stone possible to find the best possible fits for our program. And camp is a great stone for us to try to turn over to find good players. And we've been very fortunate that our camps have attracted some players that we thought were really good fits for our program. Again, the percentages are probably 15, 20 max, but you know, all those guys have been really good guys to have in our program, impactful players, and, you know, a good reason or justification for us to continue holding these camps and trying to get guys like yourselves here.
I think I started running ID camps maybe around 2015-ish. And somewhere my boss came up to me one day and said, hey, you just want to see how many, the rate of obviously return on that, on the potential students there that came, the initial students that we identified. And it was somewhere, I think around 2018, that class, I looked at the whole roster and went down individually. It was close to 50% were identified at not just our camp, but like a camp like this. That was the first time I ever laid eyes on that player. And then obviously we started the process and went through it. So I think it's a pretty good return.
So specifically juniors, if they had an opportunity to play abroad for one semester their junior year, you know, what are our thoughts? Do we encourage it, discourage it?
Does anybody have any direct thoughts immediately on this? I mean,
So I think there are several programs like that now overseas that are taking, there's programs in Europe, in Spain specifically that I can think of. There's another one in Argentina that I'm aware of. Not all of those programs are created equally, and you have to really vet them to make sure that the level is appropriate for good development to actually happen. You do risk not being in front of college coaches. That is the challenge. And so, you know, if you're someone who has already kind of been identified as and is having some conversations with schools, then that might be a really good opportunity for you. If you're a little bit more off the radar based on geography or just the team that you play on, it may not be quite as good a move if your ultimate goal is to try to get the best college opportunity possible. There is no yes or no answer to that. I think you have to really drill down and vet the program really well and kind of hedge that against who the prospective student athlete is and where they are in the process.
Where that information
Sure. So the first question, you mentioned we were talking about turning over every stone and then what are those stones look like. You'll find different niches across the country. I mean, we're all looking for a certain type of kid that fits to Christopher Newport, to Mary Wash, to William Merritt, Amos Sidney, and we all have a niche. And I highly recommend before you begin your college search, take soccer off the table and find your niche. Find out what's the most important to you, how far from home. I asked the money question to start off. How big of a school? You know, I've heard of kids going, committing to a school, and like 3 months in, they go to this massive school. Like, I wanted to go to a big school. It's like, well, why did you go to Christopher Newport? We're 5,000 students, you know? So, you know, answering those questions as early as you can, that'll narrow your list of the thousands of schools that we have down to, you know, a much more manageable list. And then from there, you can start digging in and you can find out our niche inside of that. And so, you know, for here, for CNU, for example, we are a state school. So we are cheaper for the state of Virginia. So we do well with Virginia kids. Now, I'm happy to recruit a couple Maryland kids this year or Pennsylvania kids. I'm happy to do that. But it has to be a different type of fit at that point because of how much more expensive it is for those kids. And so you'll see different types of criteria there too. Same with academics. You'll see some schools where they are basically an international or across the country only type recruiting data situation because they have to have 4.0, 1,500 SAT kids or nothing else. Like, so you'll see those types of kids and they're recruiting from Southern California all the way to Northern Maine. You know, and they have to. So they have a different type of niche, different type of criteria that they're searching for. So my best advice is find yours as fast as you can. Narrow your list to, depending on how old you are, you know, 5 to 10, 10 to 20 if you're a little younger. And then hunt those schools down and make it work from there. That's the best advice for the first question. Does anybody have anything to add on to the first question?
Yeah, I do. Justin mentioned, you know, niches and state schools versus private schools, that kind of thing. I mean, the general college research, take athletics out of the equation, is that most people go to a university that's within kind of 3 to 3.5 hours away. So for most of us, that is the initial net that we're casting, is in that area. If we're state schools, it'll probably be heavily focused on that particular state, in all of our cases, Virginia first, and then once we get outside Virginia, you know, it doesn't really matter where people are coming from. It's just a little bit easier to see people. So, you know, for us, it is going to big events, ECNL, MLS Next. Outside of those, like league tournament showcases or playoff events, you know, you'll see other events that are kind of within this region. So maybe Bethesda, NCFC, what are some of the others? Jeff Cup, you know, where it'll be a conglomeration of teams. Some of those will be outside of either MLS or ECNL or maybe ECRL. You know, it's about efficiency. We've only got so many people on staff. There are a ton of events out there. We're limited budget-wise in addition to time-wise, and so we're trying to be as efficient as possible. Those bigger events, those bigger league tournaments and things are where we start. Camps are another great way. If you're not doing any of those things, have a really good highlight video and have full games that you can back up. If a coach sees your highlights and goes, yeah, this person looks really interesting, I want to see a full game, but you know, they're far away or they're not playing in tournaments that we go to, you know, that sort of thing that might be prohibitive. There's no right or wrong answer. It's really about trying to make yourself as visible as possible. If you're in a situation where it's harder to be visible, get creative, including going to as many of these camps as you can. Yeah, the number, if you want to go back to like questions about numbers, the number of players on our roster that we saw cold just randomly are almost nil. It's almost always because they've contacted us first, we know their coach, we know the club, you know, that kind of thing. Even if it's somebody that we did see randomly, usually we were at that game to see somebody else first.
And then your second question was about two sports and kind of our general thoughts on two sport athletes out of high school.
I was a two-sport athlete growing up. I think most of us played other sports growing up, and I'm a huge fan of that. You know, I got little kids, and they're playing everything right now. As long as they're out of my house and working themselves up, I'm happy. I will say this, once you get into the recruiting process, if you are dead into two sports, my question becomes, all right, well, are you looking to play both? If that's the case, then what does that look like? Are you, like, I had a kid this past year that kicked footballs as well. And he looked at me and goes, wherever I get the best offer. So not just Division I, Division III, but financial. And, well, he's going to William & Mary to kick footballs. So, you know, that's fine. You know, that's good for him. I still recruited him and went after him. We've had a kid play here in multiple sports. He was an All-American golfer and soccer player. And he was basically ours in the fall, theirs in the spring, which you're going to have to find a school that's happy with that. I don't think all schools across the board will be happy with that. So if your goal was to play both sports, you're going to have to make sure you're up front early. And then, of course, you need to be recruited by both sport teams. But you talk about lifting every rock. I can tell you just a couple years ago, you know, Jason, I think, was recruiting the same kid. There was a kid that we were all very interested in that wanted to play baseball as well. And we're like, all right, I'm going to go talk to my baseball coach, you know. So, like, it depends.
We got him a spot.
Right. He had multiple spots. He went somewhere else, of course, not playing for either one of us, but and not playing baseball either. So, but, you know, it's – I just think that if you're up front on the front end, then you'll help yourself out in the recruiting process. The only question I have with that is if you're playing the other sport and it's taking all of your time during that season and then you're not playing soccer at all during that time, then, you know, I wonder, like, all right, well, what does that do? Your development, and I then question kind of what that looks like, but, you know, I'll answer that when I come watch you play. Sure. Anybody have add on? So the question is, you know, basically it's a general question about highlight videos and our general thoughts about, you know, what we expect. Everybody's going to have maybe similar answers, but maybe something specific. But for me, I want them short, especially if it's an introductory one. If you send me like a full game, a couple minutes. And yeah. So like if you send me an introductory email, it's a full game, I'm not watching it. Give me 2 to 3 minutes and give me your best stuff right away. Because even in that 2 to 3 minutes, we're going to the Jeff Cup and we have a couple hundred emails we're digging through, and I don't see anything in the first like 3 or 4 clips or even something. I just opened one the other day and the first clip included a turnover. I'm not even watching the rest of the video. So if you've got a killer goal, a killer save, like, wow, look at this through ball I played, that's just you're so proud of, put that early. That's going to hook me to watch the rest of your film. But even if I love every minute of it, it's still like 2 to 3 minutes, and then I now need to go watch it. The only other thing I would say is we take caution into kind of the competition in the video. So a lot of kids will send us highlight videos from high school. It makes sense. You're in a stadium. You may have the camera built in. It's a little different now with the clubs, now that you're doing the trace and the VO and all that stuff. But for a long time, we just got high school tape. And, well, the high school level isn't where we need it to be in comparison to the club level. So, you know, we will definitely, while we're looking through your video, we're going to see, like, oh, this is good competition, or, oh, what is that kid doing that he just ran past? You know, all of that factors into our decision-making on that video. And the final answer for you is basically you want it to be good enough for me to now I need to get my butt in a seat and watch him play in person. So that's kind of our path. I might then from there, if let's say the Arizona kid, I'll keep using him, or you're from Miami, right? And you talked about not being able to come watch you play. Well, let's say I really like him here and I loved his highlight film. I may then ask for his next game in a week, a full 90-minute game where I can sit down and watch it. I may then go to that type of length, but we would have to take these other steps long before I get to that. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, if I haven't seen you, I'd love updated videos. I mean, they're only 2 minutes long. If you played 6-7 games, you can clip them out, you know, especially if you have these new things where it's you press your name and you've got all of your clips. You can clip it out and send us that stuff. I love the updated ones. If you send me another email and the last video that you've sent me is from 3-4 months ago and I've already seen it, then I'm like, okay, I haven't seen anything new, so there's nothing new to discuss there. And I think you talked about, like, well, club play is generally better. I mean, there's some private schools in different parts of the country where high school is very, very high level. So don't get me wrong here. But in general, like in the state of Virginia, I think high school soccer is fine. I loved it, playing it. But I don't go to high school soccer games. I go to club games because the level's more comparable for what we're recruiting. And so I would put most of it to be club. Now, if you've got something where, like, you're running this unbelievable speed and I could see something, that doesn't matter what club or high school. Like, you're just showing me how fast you are. Like, that's stuff that I can see in there, or you're jumping through the roof, or something that doesn't matter the competition, is some specific highlight that's competition irrelevant, then yeah, you could throw that in there, no problem. I just don't want to watch you do something and say, well, yeah, I can still play at that level right now. You know, like, I want to see, like, oh yeah, you're playing against Beach FC. I know it's a pretty good ECNL team. That must be a good kid. You know, like, I'm able to see something there that matters. And then you talked earlier about, you know, outsourcing it. The thing that I care about the most is when I press play, I have like an arrow or a highlight or something. If I have to look for you, I'm done. I can't do it. Like, even in the beginning, if you tell me you're number 15 and I got to sift through the 11 players, I got little kids. You know, I want to get me as close as you can to that. Hey, here I am in this 10-second clip. I'm right here. I just watch you and I move on. If I have to sift, then I'm going to be pretty frustrated. Last one? One more? No? Yeah, oh yeah, you've had your hand up. Last one. Oh, here.
Thank you. I was wondering, is the admissions process the same for your athletes, or if it's different, could you describe that?
So the question is the admissions process different for athletes? Yeah, you're going to get maybe some different answers here. We kind of alluded to it earlier where we have buffers, some of us, where maybe they have a special talent that allows them to get in at a different criteria than an average student just applying to the school. For seniors specifically, let's say we're ready to move forward with you and ask you to apply. As soon as you apply, I tag you in a system and it puts you in an athlete pile, and that gives me different access to it, like what Andrew was talking about with being able to see kind of like what's going on in your application. I can help you through the process and even get you an answer earlier. But you might get different answers across the board. I don't know if it's different rules for Division One or anything like that. No, it would just be a William & Mary thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Same? Yeah. That makes sense?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Look, if you have follow-up questions, we're going to be with you all tonight and most of the day tomorrow. Parents, feel free if you see a break and you want to come up and ask another one. Don't hesitate. We're here to help, and we love answering these questions. So.